upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Welcome, my friends, to Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, your host for this broadcast. There are people now coming from all over the world to listen to this broadcast, as well as to read the pages of technocracy.news. This is amazing to me, but everyone is welcome. And of course, I only speak English, so you have to listen in English. But this is exciting that people are coming from every continent on the face of our planet to listen and study and learn more about technocracy. Our first story today is going to deal with eugenics and gene editing. And I have to say that if this type of technology had been available during World War II, and in particular to Adolf Hitler of Nazi Germany, we would be living in a different world today, for sure. Probably far more screwed up than it is today, too. But nobody wants to call gene editing eugenics. But that's exactly what it is. The heading on the first article today is eugenics. Will gene editing make rich people superior? Doesn't that sound like World War II genetics? Superior? Can gene editing create a superior class or race of people? Well, rich transhumans, many of whom are associated with Silicon Valley and big tech, fully expect that gene editing will take over the process of evolution, allowing them to design humanity 2.0. Personally, I believe they're wrong, but that will not hinder their efforts at achieving humanity 2.0 using the so-called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, Cas9, C-A-S-9 technology. Scientists know it's possible to rearrange the genetic code in ways that have never been possible before. They certainly overestimate their ability to control these edits. But nevertheless, they believe that this technology will lead to a situation in the future where literally humans can be rearranged in their DNA to create all kinds of desirable features, including the attainment of eternal life. That's right, to escape death. Now, it just so happens that Scottsdale, Arizona, is the headquarters of one organization that has been instrumental in transhumanism for the last 30 years. They're very well known. And recently, just this last week, a young student flew in from Sweden. Her name is Ingrid Backstrom. She's a graduate student. She's working on a master's degree in cultural anthropology in Sweden. She came to Scottsdale, Arizona to pay homage to the original founders of modern transhumanism who happen to reside and work in Scottsdale. And she came to study the movement from its inception, really, 30 years ago. Of course, transhumanism, the philosophy, dates back well before 30 years ago. But these particular people that she came to visit are considered to be the leaders of modern transhumanism. And so she writes in an article, she touches down in sunny Scottsdale, Arizona, with a snowing Stockholm in my rear view. I now embark on a big adventure as an anthropologist out in the field. You can feel her excitement. I left the comfort of the warm and safe library that resides in the edifice dating back to 1477 and from which I step out and explore the field of transhumanism. And to my surprise, I enjoyed the fresh air. Well, she goes on and writes, the first day I was invited to Professor Natasha Vita Moore's study, a room filled with her marvelous achievements captured in frames that are hanging on the walls. I found myself in the middle of a gold mine as I was given the opportunity to go through some of the artifacts from the Extropy Institute, such as Extropy magazines, newsletters, and conference materials. These mark the very beginnings of the transhumanist movement. From here, the bookcase is filled with the progression of ideas over the past 30 years, three decades of transhumanist growth and advancements in the sciences, technologies, philosophy, ethics, and innovations toward reaching the transhumanist goal of improving the human condition. Provided with a little desk of my own and with a piece of history in my hands, I started the quest of trying to unravel the mystery of transhumanism and its following movement. Since then, I have conducted participant observations with key informant Professor Vita Moore at the University of Advancing Technology, where she teaches ethics courses. I have also conducted three Skype interviews with Dr. James J. Hughes, Newton Lee, and Didler Cornell. Lastly, I also had the great pleasure of getting a tour at Alcor Life Extension Foundation by Dr. Max Moore, married to Professor Vita Moore, by the way. After these initial 3 weeks of my fieldwork here in Scottsdale, my first impression of the movement so far is that it is a community with a strong sense of refreshing optimism and hope for the future of the human body. So I invite you to follow me on my path of learning more about the transhumanist movement from an anthropological perspective as I explore questions such as, how do the transhumanist philosophy and movement perceive and relate to the biological body as well as the enhanced body? Will we be able to upload our brains? And how do transhumanists view the vitrified body? Well, the organization that she speaks about, the Alcor Life Extension Foundation, is headquartered in Scottsdale. And yes, it is headed by Dr. Max Moore, who is a PhD in philosophy and also happens to be an outspoken transhumanist and probably the most prolific writer and promoter of transhumanism in this century. Alcor Life Extension Foundation is involved with cryonics, freezing heads when people die, with the hope that one day technology will be there to resuscitate, to bring these people back to life, to extract or data mine their intelligence and their soul from their long frozen head to bring them into a state of immortality. Sounds a little crazy, but this is what they're doing and this is what they believe. So transhumanism is not a myth. It's not a conspiracy of any kind. It's wide open, in the open. Plenty of documentation out there explaining how these transhumanists intend to change the human condition to bring it to a state of immortality and perfection. I hope personally that they don't experiment too much with this gene editing technology called CRISPR, because it's still very much in the Stone Age as far as understanding what they're doing. It'd be like trying to chop down a tree with a stone axe. It'll take a while, and the tree will get really beat up along the way. The second story is really very disturbing. I've been telling you for a long time that the police state is coming here, just like it is in China, because technocrats in China are no different than technocrats in America. It's a philosophy and an ideology that completely transcends national boundaries. The second headline is U.S. police capture 117 million in facial recognition systems. This is a study that was done by Georgetown Law 3 years ago. I missed this study. Maybe I wasn't looking back then. But they did a study, a nationwide study, of law enforcement agencies, police departments in other words, to find out what they were doing with facial recognition technology. So this is already 3 years old. However, at that time, they noted that up to 117 million people were already in at least one facial recognition database, and that for the most part, the FBI and other intel agencies had access to all these things across the country. And it starts out, the article starts out, says, there's a knock on your door. It's the police. There was a robbery in your neighborhood. They have a suspect in custody and an eyewitness, but they need your help. Will you come down to the station to stand in the lineup? Most people would probably answer no. This summer, the Government Accountability Office revealed that close to 64 million Americans do not have a say in the matter. 16 states let the FBI use facial recognition technology to compare the faces of suspected criminals to their driver's license and ID photos, creating a virtual lineup of their state residents. In this lineup, it's not a human that points to the suspect. It's an algorithm. But the FBI is only one part of the story. Across the country, state and local police departments are building their own face recognition systems, many of them more advanced than the FBI's. We know very little about these systems. We don't know how they impact privacy and civil liberties. We don't know how they address accuracy problems. And we don't know how any of these systems, local, state, or federal, affect racial and ethnic minorities. This report closes these gaps. And by the way, this is a report you need to read. It's authoritative, done by a major educational institution in America. And even though it may have a certain bias to it, they've gathered a lot of data on this topic. So it continues. The result of a year-long investigation and over 100 records requests to police departments around the country, it is the most comprehensive survey to date of law enforcement face recognition and the risk that it poses to privacy, civil liberties, and civil rights. Combining FBI data with new information we obtained about state and local systems, we find that law enforcement face recognition affects over 117 million American adults. It is also unregulated. Note this, it is also unregulated. A few agencies have installed meaningful protections to prevent the misuse of technology. In many more cases, it is out of control. That's it. The benefits of face recognition are real, it says. It has been used to catch violent criminals and fugitives. The law enforcement officers who use the technology are men and women of good faith. They do not want to invade our privacy or create a police state. They're simply using every tool available to protect the people they are sworn to serve. Police use of face recognition is inevitable. Their conclusions and key findings in this study are absolutely shocking. And while the study concludes that the use of face recognition technology is inevitable, it doesn't offer any particular tools to stop it. Now, we know in recent days that cities like San Francisco and Oakland are completely kicking back against facial recognition technology. San Francisco just outlawed it. Their city supervisor said no more. We're not going to allow any facial recognition systems in our city, and that would also include the city police. Now, that may be a case of the pendulum swinging too far in the other direction, because maybe there is a use for some type of facial recognition technology if it was corralled with the correct type of legislation to protect the privacy of individuals and to prevent the law enforcement agencies from abusing the system. Right now, the Supreme Court actually has upheld the fact that law enforcement does not need a search warrant to do an online search for your photograph for the sake of identity. They can do it at any time, for any reason, legal or not. And the last story today is going to tie into this one. China now is making a wild claim that its so-called social credit system has, quote, restored morality in its country. That's correct. It's restored morality in China. All of China's 1.4 billion citizens are now enrolled in its facial recognition and social credit system. And the credit system has nothing to do with money, by the way. They call it a social credit scoring system, which rates and ranks people automatically by algorithm, of course, as to how good a citizen they are and how likely they are to support the government position on anything. And if they're troublemakers of any sort, they get bounced from the system. They get denied economic privileges like travel rights or living rights, where they're allowed to live, where they're allowed to attend school. You mess up in China, you simply get kicked out of the system. And the type of shaming that results on people who have been blacklisted is absolutely incredible. The government has the ability to install automatically a certain ringtone in your phone that you can't change. So whenever anybody calls you, this certain ringtone sounds off. And everybody in the locale around you knows that you've been kicked out of the system, that you're untrustworthy, that you need to be shunned. Well, I guess the answer is partially, well, quit carrying a smartphone. But they have other ways as well, because they can identify you with their facial recognition software everywhere you go. China intends to have up to 600 million cameras installed by 2020. That's just next year. 18 months from now, they'll be completely spread all over the country. So they can track you anywhere that you go, whether you have a cell phone on you or not. And the social credit scoring apps that work on other people's phones can also immediately identify anybody around them that's been kicked out of the system. 13 million people have been blacklisted. This is absolutely incredible. And China, on top of that, says that they have restored morality as a result of this. I'm not sure what their idea of morality is, but it's certainly not the morality that we can describe in the West. China has morphed into a technocracy over the last 30 years. I wish more people would get in touch with this, but they just can't seem to grasp the concept. The trappings of communism are still there. Yes, they are. The red flag with a star, the main chamber where their Politburo meets, their committee, the titles that are still used to describe some positions, is still called the Communist Party, but they're not communist anymore. They're technocrats. This is the science of social engineering that was defined even back in the 1930s to control all of society. Has China done that? Yes, they have. They have complete autocratic control over every single individual in the country. And if anybody does not measure up to their view of the model citizen, boom, you're out of the system. You can't, in a figurative sense, buy or sell anymore. And yes, for Christians that might be listening to this broadcast, if you have any sense of Bible prophecy at all, you will immediately be thinking about the mark of the beast, that when given to individuals during that period of time in the future known as the tribulation, that those people will be unable to buy and sell. Well, the criteria may be a little bit different at that point in time, but the point is somebody's going to be able to make that decision. Who doesn't measure up to my standard of whatever? Is it just arbitrary? Can anybody come in and make something up and decide who deserves to be in the system and who doesn't? Well, in China's case, they already have. And 1.4 billion citizens, by the way, is a lot of people. It's a very large percentage of the world now. And even worse, China is exporting its technology to other nations who are willing to buy it. And this includes many police stations, even in America, who are not regulated any way, shape, or form, who can purchase this kind of technology and use it for a local setting, and nobody's really watching. Nobody's really paying attention. Legislators are so far out of the loop at this point, they're suffering from what Alvin Toffler wrote about called future shock. They're just detached from the reality of it. They don't get it. It's like magic, a magic trick, and they just don't get it. We desperately have a need right now in America, especially, for civic leaders to wake up and smell the coffee. China's system of scientific dictatorship is just a model of what's coming to America. If you haven't read my latest book, Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, get a copy of it and it will connect the dots for you. It's not difficult to read. It's not difficult to understand. Hundreds of footnotes document it. You can do your own research to find out if what I say is true. But I think you know, as well as I do, that this whole surveillance issue in the world today is leading to scientific dictatorship. It's leading to technocracy. We have a limited time to put the brakes on it in America. So head over to technocracy.news, check out my books on technocracy, and you can also go to amazon.com if you live in another country. It might be easier to get the book through Amazon because they have units in many continents, including Australia and Europe, Great Britain, Canada. Get a copy delivered. Get after it. And by the way, if you're able to read the stories on technocracy.news, please take a minute in every case to share these stories with your audience on your own social media accounts or by email to people that you know that might be interested. And there's a special quick start page also on the right-hand side of the home page. You can click on quick start and it'll take you to a page that gives some bullet points and some videos and stuff for people to get up to speed quickly on technocracy. You can use that page to send to people, just send them a link. Tell them to get to work. Start learning about this stuff. America needs to reject it, and our time is running out. So I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. So glad you're with us today. We'll see you tomorrow.